And now we'll turn to the first thing that comes to mind about drones, their military use in combat missions around the world. Bruce Black is a retired U.S. Air Force drone pilot, and over the course of several years, he logged more than 1,500 hours flying drones in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. The surreal part is that he piloted many of those missions out of Creech Air Force Base, about 35 miles north of Las Vegas.
It is very strange. You get up in the morning and kiss your family goodbye and drive off. And the next thing you know, I mean, as soon as you step into the squadron, you're on a war footing. Being in the box is a very immersive environment. It's like you're actually there. You're hearing the bullets whiz over the guys' heads. You are hearing the stress in their voices. You're hearing the need for the support that you are providing. And then you would debrief after your missions, and you get in your car and you drive home, and all of a sudden you're back in a civilian environment. One minute you're totally immersed in a war environment. Life and death, the decisions are hinging on what you say and you do. And the next minute you drive home and somebody's upset at you because your pickup truck leaked oil in the driveway.
So what did you and your fellow pilots do to help make that transition, to prevent your two worlds from seeping into each other?
Well, I don't know, maybe it's a male trait of being able to compartmentalize. You get fairly good at it. This is my combat life. This is my private life. Do they interact sometimes? Yes. Do you carry the stress home with you? Yes. But there was no particular routine that I had ever heard anybody develop that helped them make that transition. You're just kind of expected to do that.
Yeah, it's part of the job. So tell me about some of the missions you carried out. Were they mostly about surveillance?
Most of it was surveillance. 99% of what we did was trying to figure out what was going on, where people were, where assets were, so that I could send that data off and the ground troops could take care of that. That was 99% of our job.
What can you see? And how well can you see it? I mean, how good is the resolution?
It's extremely good. Some of the cameras, depending on which aircraft you're flying, are HD. I could tell you whether somebody was holding up four fingers or five fingers.
Wow.
At times. Yes, the resolution's that good. It's dependent on how far away you are from the subject.
So you must have felt, if you were following people, you must have felt like you really got to know them.
You spend a lot of time doing that. And yes, you want to be very sure of your target. For example, when we actioned Zarqawi, we took out Zarqawi, we flew 600 hours on him to track him, figure out where he was, figure out the compound he was in, who was in the compound with him, so that when they struck that compound, there was as few people that were going to get hurt as possible. And we actually delayed the strike on that compound because there were some people in there that they didn't want to hurt. And they knew Zarqawi wasn't going to move from there.
Now, when a strike is called, one of the things that must be really different from being on the ground is that a fighter pilot drops his bomb and leaves, but a drone sticks around, right?
Yes. The typical Predator mission was 20 hours. Let's say you were going to actually do a strike that day. That aircraft may be following that target for 18 hours prior to that point. And then you're going to strike the target, and then you stick around and watch afterwards to see what the effects were. And that has a lot of different aspects to it. But one of them is that you're very sure of what you're striking, and you're very sure of the battle damage afterwards. And that's a big help as far as military planning goes.
Well, it must be personally pretty difficult. I mean, how much do you see of the aftermath?
A lot.
So it must be hard.
It is.
I don't know. How do you deal with that?
Everybody deals with it differently. I would have a very visceral, guttural reaction to some of that. And then some of it, you're just mad, because they're shooting at people that you care about. And everybody's different. Everybody has a different level. But I think if you were to ask your average crew after a strike and you get them away from each other and away from the bravado of being in the squadron, it's a very strange feeling. For me, it's a rather sickening feeling. But you do what you need to do to support the people that are counting on you.
See, this is the thing that I think the public at least tends to worry, that you put guys behind drones, have them pilot drones, and the bloodshed and the killing won't feel real. you know, that it'll all just be some remote thing and we're killing people across the world and it's all just like a big video game. But from what you're saying, it sounds like that's not at all the case.
I would vehemently disagree with that assessment. I would say it is more real to me than your average fast mover, meaning a jet fighter, that shows up, has 15 minutes to drop his ordnance, and then get back to a tanker. I watched him for a day, 7 days, a month. We finally struck him, and then I watched the aftermath of it and had to have my crew describe how it went. It was much more real to me than what I would expect a fighter pilot to have seen and done.
Yeah, that reminds me of some of the recent reports that have found drone pilots are very susceptible to PTSD, as much so as ground troops. Is that something you and your squad talk about?
We talk about it in the very early days of flying drones. I don't think they were as much worried about it. And then some instances started cropping up. I don't think we have a higher rate than the rest of the communities. One of the doctors that I had talked to when I was in the squadron, he said he wouldn't call it PTSD. It's something else. But there was a stressor that was showing itself in that community and that they were concerned about it.
I'm curious. I'd love to know more about your missions. I know there's probably a limit to what you can tell us. But I don't know. What missions are you proudest of?
My proudest moment was... I thought the mission that day was going to be extremely boring. My portion of it was 4 hours of watching the aircraft do circles in the air. About halfway through my shift, a new sensor operator comes into the box, and he sat down in the seat, and he goes, "Hey, Colonel Black, hi, I'm Sergeant Kim, and it's my first mission off of Mission Qual." And he sits down in the seat, and I said, "Don't worry about it. It's going to be easy. You know, we're just doing circles today." Right after he sits down, we get a tip that something was happening in this particular sector, and they asked us to take a look at it. So we swing the ball over and we take a look at it, and there's two guys digging in the ground. Well, it was 2 o'clock in the morning in Baghdad. Nobody's fixing their plumbing at 2 o'clock in the morning in Baghdad. And then as we sit and watch it, we start seeing there's a couple of wires trailing off from where they're digging going to another house. And so we say, okay, this is suspicious. We need to get a JTAC on there, which is a joint air attack controller. So we finally get somebody on there, and we're getting ready to strike this position. And all of a sudden, comes into the picture this convoy of big trucks. And it's like, oh my God, these guys are going to drive right over the top of it. So I tell my sensor operator, I says, "Fire on the truck." And what I wanted him to do was just turn his laser on and point it at the truck and fire. And he goes, "Sir, you want to blow up the truck?" And I go, no, put your laser designator on him. And what everybody there in country knows, that if this beam comes out of the sky and it's flashing right on you or right in front of your truck, stop, don't move. So we put our tracker in front of him and we start flashing it and everything stops. And if I didn't save that convoy, I saved somebody in the next one. And that's my proudest moment.
Wow. That was quite a first day for the kid sitting next to you.
Exactly. His first day, his first combat, and he's just saved a bunch of people. You know, it was wonderful. It was a wonderful thing.
Now, it's so interesting because in that story also, there's the other thing that people worry about, which is the potential for civilian deaths. I mean, you had to decide, you know, and not you alone, but you all had to decide that these two people who were digging were definitely worth killing.
And it took us about an hour, maybe two, I can't remember the length of time, but to figure out that that was not just somebody fixing their plumbing. And that's the beauty of drones.
So what do you make then of, I mean, a lot of human rights groups have raised concerns about the toll drones have taken on civilian populations. I think there was a report earlier this year found that hundreds of civilians were killed in drone strikes in Pakistan alone in the past 5 years.
Well, I'm a natural skeptic of some of that. Do civilian casualties happen? Yes, they happen in all wars. War is a horrible thing, and that's one of the calculuses that has to be made by the leadership when they decide to engage, is are you willing to pay the price for what you are about to do, politically, morally, ethically, and if you believe in a God, to your God someday, are you willing to take that price? As I say, I'm a skeptic of some of Amnesty International's reporting at the time. For example, there was one report about a lady that was blown up by a drone strike, but they had no evidence of that. And I myself watched civilians get blown up because they happened to be walking in the wrong place and a bomb went off that a bomb in placer had not planned on. He was trying to get a blue force and he ended up blowing up a sheep herder. So I don't know their evidence. I haven't seen it. And I don't think they have bothered to publish any of that either.
Do you think drones are the future of war?
Yes. But again, I have to caution the point. I mean, a lot of people talk about drones and everybody thinks drones, it's unmanned. It's just doing it automatically. For every drone, every predator that flew, it took 175 people to make that happen for a 24-hour shift. On the Global Hawk, it takes 450 people to make that happen.
I'm curious. I mean, right now, the U.S. has the advantage because we're flying drones against an enemy that doesn't have any. But if drones are going to be the future of warfare, that's not always going to be the case. I mean, what will happen when drones are much more common, when the enemy you're flying against has drones?
And that's what we need to be prepared for. We need to be moving forward on how to counter that. And they're already there. I think you heard the reports about Hamas launching a drone against Israel. That's new, and it's coming. Everybody can see the effectiveness.
Well, Bruce, thank you for your service, and thank you so much for telling us about it.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
Bruce Black is a retired U.S. Air Force drone pilot.